Hey, I'm Andy from the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Our show is pretty simple. Five lifelong friends competing on a single topic to see who gets bragging rights. Each episode, Nick, Scott, Brian, Kelly, and I battle through 10 questions on movies, music, science, history, sports, whatever we decide to throw in the blender for that week. Every episode stands on its own, so you can jump in wherever your curiosity takes you. And we don't just stop at right or wrong. We get into the backstory, the origins, the weird facts, and the stuff that has you saying, "How did I not know that already?" So download an episode, play along, keep score, and tell us how you do. See if you can beat the crew on the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeks from the Multiverse Podcast. We are talking about Planet of the Apes. That's right. One minute, it's a sci-fi classic. The next minute, we've got psychic mutant humans worshiping a nuclear bomb. So today, we're asking the real question. Is Planet of the Apes still a sci-fi classic, or did it go full banana peel after one movie? Let's get geeky.
We're geeks from the multiverse. We've come to unite all geeks. Now it's time to get geeky and dive right in, because we're geeks from the multiverse.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? We are Geeks from the Multiverse Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Grumpy Beard, with me as always, Captain Lestat.
Yo, everybody! Yes, today, of course, with Planet of the Apes, it's interesting, Matt, because I know we've talked a lot about, you know, classic, you know, sci-fi movies like this, you know, but not particularly like this one. I mean, of course, like, you know, you have your, you know, your original version of Planet of the Apes, which only didn't... I think, was it only one movie originally? And then, like, didn't they, I don't know if they made, like,
no, there's
more,
or was of, there's a bunch of Planet of the Apes. I mean, there's at least three or four of the original movies, but...
Yeah, they all kind of suck, though. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, after the first one, where you go after, you know, the one of the best actors of that time.
I know.
Charlton Heston was not in any of the other ones, but you also have, like, weird telekinetic mutant humans that literally worship. I mean, if you could imagine what a cartoon nuclear bomb looks like, that's what was in this movie, right? It was like the classic, you know, round, like round bomb with the little fins on it. Like,
like I said, you know, when you're looking at the originals versus, you know, some of the newer, you know, Planet of the Apes and stuff. I mean, I know Matt's favorite Planet of the Apes of all time is with Mark Wahlberg. I mean, I know we've said that already.
Oh, fuck that bullshit right there.
What do you mean? Didn't you tell me I can't remember how long ago it was. I'm pretty sure you said Mark Wahlberg was the best actor of all the Planet of the Apes, and you said this directly. You even said, quote me on this, Mark Wahlberg should
no,
be.
No,
I never said this.
So altogether, the original, like, 1970s, Planet of the Apes had five movies.
Oh my god!
And then we have the Tim Burton. Mm. That's the Tim Burton.
Yeah, no. That's
remake.
That's the one that Matt loves all the time.
And then we have the newer ones, which is kind of the reboot: the Rise of Planet of the Apes, Dawn, the War, and Kingdom. Like, we have those newer ones.
Oh, yeah.
So there's 10 in all together.
So the question is, man, do you like the old or the new?
Well, like we were getting to already, the original games, I mean, not games, the original movies, I don't have games in my head for some reason.
Really?
The first one, I think, is the most epic of all of them. I still watch it to this day. Like, I think it's just a good move. Like, what they did with it was really good. And the twist at the end where you're like, the Statue of Liberty gets revealed and you're like, oh my gosh, they're on Earth this whole time. Like, that's like the epic thing. But like, once you get to, you know, Beneath the Planet of the Apes and you get to Escape and Conquest, like, humans and apes start intermingling with each other, and like, they're no longer, it's like no longer apes versus humans. It's like just a rigmarole of stuff. And there's like weird mutant people that can talk through their thoughts, and it just gets weird.
Well, and that's what I was saying. I mean, I feel like, you know, you have to give a little bit of credit, you know, to the, especially the newer ones, because I think the newer ones really kind of make it more epic. And I mean, I'm glad that they followed, you know, Caesar for three movies, you know, in that sense. And so, like, at least it kind of builds that up. I mean, the last couple, the last one that they did, when they, like, fast forward through time and, like, you know, showed this, like, ape empire kind of a thing. I mean, it's a little different, but I mean, at least they're, you know, at least they're following suit and they're actually, like, following a story and not, like, hey, let's get some weird humanoid, you know, animals and, you know, start telekinetic, you know, talking with their thoughts and shit. I mean, maybe that's probably what they're going to end up doing. And then I'm going to be like, we're done. This is too much. We're done now.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about this a couple episodes ago.
I think it was a couple.
This one is based on a book. It's literally, I mean, it's legit Planet of the Apes, if you bought it in America. And it's a satire that follows this French journalist. He participates in a voyage to a distant planet where speechless, animalistic humans are hunted and enslaved by advanced society of apes. And in the book, the apes are sorted into certain classes. So gorillas are police officers, chimpanzees are scientists, the orangutans are politicians, you know. So they're different classes and stuff. And then, I mean, it basically just follows that this, you know, humans were dominated, you know, they once dominated the planet, but the apes overthrew them. And that's what the book is about. And so that's kind of like the original movie, even though they kind of changed that arc and made it like, no, they're not on a distant planet. They are on Earth. Changes that whole dynamic of like, wait, they're not on a weird planet. Like, this is our planet. You know what I mean? So it brings a different fear and a different level of,
you know,
emotions to it.
No, I agree. And I was also going to say, I mean, you know, we've talked about like a lot of movies where it's scary that it could actually happen. You know, and I feel like I'm not saying that. I mean, you know, we've talked about like zombies. We've talked about like aliens. And we've talked about all these different things. But like, I don't know, man. I mean, could this be a thing? If we were stupid enough to try this and like, you know, in the case of like the newer movies where they, you know, kind of like tested, you know, Caesar on this, you know, and like kind of made him more intelligent and this and that. Yeah. I mean, I could say that if they went that far, this could actually be a thing.
I think it's just on that level where, you know, I don't know if to the extreme of like the movies would make it, but I do think it's that. And this is why the book is more of a satire than it is like, you know, like a realistic book that's like, hey, this really happened. Like, no, I think it's really the failings of our own human nature, right? Like, even in the newer movies, like they're trying to create this, you know, medication or whatever for apes to be smarter. And they incidentally create a virus that kills off most of humanity.
No,
what I mean? Like,
I'm also thinking of like I Am Legend. You know what I mean? And like,
same thing. They were trying to cure cancer or something in that. Yeah.
And like, but that's the thing though. I mean, it's just we as humans, I mean, like, could we be this stupid? Honestly, yes. I feel like we could be this stupid because again, this could, I believe, and this is just me, that if this ever did happen, I mean, we're kind of fucked in that defense. But I mean, it's just, it's weird because a lot of these movies, just like this one, it's so realistic to the point where you're also thinking like, shit, this actually could happen if we were stupid enough to, you know, to do half the stuff that they were doing in the movies and things like that. And that's where, you know, a movie like this is where I'm like, you know, I'm not saying it's like a weird like fear or anxiety, but it's like, you know, in the back of your brain, you're just like, shit, you know, if we were that fucking stupid, you know, this could, I mean, it's just like Terminator. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different series, but I mean, this is another one that I think if we were stupid, this could be a thing. And that's all I'm saying. But before I feel like we get on though, I think we need to do some CTAs, our little call to actions real quick.
Yes. So we always say this every episode, but give us that fist bump, you know, that follow, the interact, subscribe, tell a friend. You know, we do have a YouTube page. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. I mean, you can go to any of those and you can listen to our full episodes. You can also hit us up on our website, which is our own podcast hub for everything, you know, GFTM. Full episodes. We have a blog there. We got Evolve page that has resource vault and all kinds of things. Our merch is there. Mm-hmm. We have a whole media page. You can listen to our Spotify playlist that we have on there and a whole lot more. I mean, if you want to connect, you can connect. It's a one-stop shop.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, with Geeks from the Multiverse, I mean, we're always trying to expand as much as we can. And I know one thing that Matt and I wanted to start doing was actually start, and I know I already started to do this, but like kind of going out to like local shops, you know, reaching out to, because, you know, you guys, especially locally or maybe internationally, maybe wherever, you know, we want to start, you know, basically making sure that people know who we are. And so like, you know, especially locally first, and then, you know, if we can get to bigger, you know, names and things like that, and, you know, spread the word, you know, that works as well. But real quick, two things I was thinking about it since we're on the CTA here. So one, I know last week was actually on the 19th. So I did do the Boston Marathon Tough Ruck. See, I wanted to pause there for a second because I was like, I know I didn't actually do the Boston Marathon. But Tough Ruck, I passed it. I did it. I, you know, did it within 8 hours, 40 minutes and some odd seconds. But let me tell you something, Matt. Don't ever do it.
I can't imagine doing
it. No, I mean, it was a good time, but I will say that it takes a lot out of you. That's all I'm going to say. And if you guys ever, you know, want to really test yourself physically, mentally, you know, I guess emotionally too, but I would say definitely physically and mentally is definitely one thing that I would say it does that with. But I mean, I was proud of myself to be able to do it. My family did it with me. You know, we finally did all stuff like that. So, you know, maybe I'll post it on, you know, social media too, for you guys. But if not, it's fine. I mean, I'm probably going to keep doing it every year. But the other thing I was going to mention is, since I know Matt's not going to do it. So yes, I'm going to say it. Yes. Actually when this episode comes out, I'll be 33 and everyone's like, oh, you're not that old. I'm like, yeah, I know. Cause then when I talk about Matt, he's like, shit up. Don't mention my age. And I'll mention my age. I don't care. Cause yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm 33. Yeah. Okay. Woo. You know, yes. My point is that yes, I'm having my own birthday. You know, I know Matt's working. I'll be like, yeah, whatever. I know he'll be like,
yeah, we're not doing shit.
So no, I mean, I just wanted to say it's all good, but I just wanted to just mention it real quick. But you know, another thing is too, is that, you know, I know Matt probably was going to say this is at some point is yes, you should really check out his book. I know with Echoverse, you know, dropping a little bit ago. I mean, he also has his other books as well, The Amulet Keepers. You know, check out his stuff as well, because I know he's been working hard on that and trying to, you know, spread the word on that and those things. Let's just say, I'm going to say this, there have been some things that I've been trying to work on, not so much really writing books, but I am trying to eventually start another channel on YouTube. But I'm not going to say too much about it, because I know Matt's like, the hell are you talking about? But that's going to be, it's all going to be okay. I've been working on it for a little bit. I've been trying to figure out the niche and stuff. So yes, once that comes out, I'll let you guys know. But I just figured I'd give you a heads up that I am trying to do something. You know, since Matt likes to do his writing and everything else that he's been doing, I feel like now I got to do something. And it's been a long time. So I'm going to try something else. But anyways.
It's always good to do something else.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and then maybe Matt will be like, yeah, I'll never do this with you. So it's okay. But anyways, yes. Yeah, so
Planet of the Apes. So what I find interesting, and this is like just something I just found now. The novel was brought to the attention of an American film producer, Arthur P. Jacobs.
Mm.
And he initially wanted to make a King Kong movie, but at the time, King Kong was already done.
Oh, yeah, back in the early 40s at the time?
Well, when this movie was made, it was 68, but King Kong, he actually says, like, I wish King Kong hadn't been made so he could make it. And one of his agents had mentioned Planet of the Apes. I mean, it's not the same thing, but it kind of almost is.
Like, well, I mean, yeah, to a degree.
It's ape-related, right?
Like, well, I mean, yeah, and I guarantee you, in his mind, he was like, man, this is a great opportunity. Yeah, sure, let's do it.
Man, King Kong's an ape. Planet of the Apes.
Are there giant apes in this? I don't know. We'll find out.
So a lot of like what, and this is going by the notes that we have. It's probably like the last point, but if you know anything about the original Twilight Zone series, that was Rod Sterling.
Yes.
But Rod Sterling had helped him to shape the screenplay, which if you watch the original, and this is like the 1968 original film, you immediately like understand like his filmmaking, the tone, the twist driven storytelling. I mean, it's almost, you could almost put this in Twilight Zone category with how weird it is. But, you know, yeah, Charlton Heston, he was a huge actor at the time, you know, 60s, 50s.
Everyone's like, who the fuck's that? Well, you'd have to watch the original Planet of the Apes to understand this one.
But, I mean, this was, you know, we kind of said it in the small talk, like, before we got, you know, before we got into the CTAs and everything. But, I mean, this is like, if you ever wanted, like, a social commentary on humanity, like, this movie tackled, like, themes that were happening at the time, like nuclear war, religion versus science, even that human arrogance that we were talking about.
Here's the other thing. Are we not talking about this shit right now? Nuclear war, religion versus science, human arrogance. That sounds like a very similar pattern.
It sounds like exactly, you know, but it flips the script. I mean, and this movie was like, I don't think that there was a movie quite on this level that did like the ape makeup for like 70% of this, you know, the casting.
Oh no. I mean, when you look at the practical and the makeup and the cosmetics and all the stuff that they were doing in this movie, it's like what they did with Star Wars at the time as well. They created everything from the ground up. There wasn't like, we had to have CGI. There was no such thing as CGI at this point. So like,
no, CGI in like 68 was probably like weird Superman level.
Oh, I was gonna say claymation,
but I mean, it probably was claymation. I mean, that
probably
at that point, was. But 68, like you're not talking like, oh yeah, they, you know, just a team of people sitting behind computers. No, if they were on a computer at all in 68, the computer, I can guarantee you, filled a goddamn house.
I was going to say, that was probably NASA.
Yeah.
It was on a computer.
But yeah, I mean, the ape makeup was, I mean, the idea behind this movie was like, you know, you have Charlton Heston, you have like the female actor that was in that movie, but it's really like you're taking apes and making them main characters. Like they're the dominant species in this movie. And most movies, I think, like, didn't really tackle this, where, like, you're having legit human apes as your main players. And you know, and it wasn't, like, just all the apes are the villains in the story, because there were two, you know, more of the chimp, you know, the chimps. This is where you get the different classes.
Oh, yeah.
That were more of, like, the scientists that were sort of helping the humans when they could, because they didn't believe in like the killing and the imprisoning and stuff like that. But
yeah, and I mean, when you're looking at, because I was just trying to remember some of the original movie, I mean, you know, and even when you were talking about the book, I mean, for the most part, I mean, it, I wasn't saying it's spot on, but I mean, of course there's some slight differences, things like that, but I mean, yeah, when you're looking at the characters being, you know, like the orangutans being politicians, and, you know, the gorillas being the police officers and the law enforcement. And then, you know, you got your, what was it, the, who was the scientist again? Chimpanzees?
Yeah, they were more like chimps.
Yeah, like, yeah. But, you know, like each one had their own, like, section of, like, where they were good at or, you know, what they were planning on doing. But, like, I mean, I'll say it, man. I know your favorite line from that movie. I mean, I know you want to say it. I know you want to say it. Go ahead. I need you to say it.
I'm going to wait to say it.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to wait to say it. Fine. No, but it was Roddy McDowell. If you don't know who Roddy McDowell is, you just have to look him up. But he was pretty popular. And like even in the 80s, I think he was kind of popular. But Roddy McDowell and Maurice Evans, or Linda Harrison, rather. Sorry. Linda Harrison, they played Zira and Nova. They were the chimpanzees that were kind of the scientists. And then Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius was the orangutan minister of science. So that's, you know, kind of like the main players. And obviously, yes, Charlton Heston was Taylor. That was his character. And yeah, I mean, I think you take the story of like how we treat animals now. Maybe I don't know about 68 how they treated animals because I wasn't alive then, but
I mean
I'm sure it's not as good as it is. I mean, maybe now because we have PETA and all this other stuff, but I think back in 68, maybe I don't think PETA was really like a huge organization. Like, I'm sure the mistreatment of animals was just as bad as how we treated human beings.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna check it right now.
But it was that reversal of how the apes were treating humans that really kind of reversed that role, like imprisoning them and beating them and not feeding them and, you know, treating them basically like just criminal underclass people.
So PETA was founded in 1980. So 22 years later, this, you know, so in this case, no, I would say in 68.
Yeah, yes, there probably wasn't much regulation
regarding all this.
Yeah. But I mean, we can assume, I mean, back in 68 or 1970s, we were institutionalizing people for mental health. We weren't giving them treatment. We were putting them in an institution and basically locking them up and going, hey, see you later, guys.
Not only that, I mean, shit, we've been doing that. I mean, I think, I mean, we're still kind of doing it,
but at least there's treatment and there's medication. But then it was like, oh, you're dealing with this. See you later.
Bye-bye.
And basically you were in probably like a multi-bed, you know, room, and there was community rooms. Well, you guys were all, like, they were all together.
I know, well, hold on. Before we go any further, I mean, because I know it's kind of a little side topic. I mean, people that technically even had, autism and things like that, they were getting thrown into mental institutions. And so any disability and all this other stuff, I mean, you were just throwing everybody in together, which was not a good move by any means, because that means you're talking about somebody who's schizophrenic, let's call it.
Yeah,
bipolar, or whoever.
People that actually have mental health issues that might have needed more assistance because they couldn't live in society. But then you're also talking about, I mean, we're talking 68, so I'm being real here. But if you said, oh, I have gender dysmorphia, I don't know what gender I am, you probably would find yourself in an institution in 1968.
Absolutely. And I know we're kind of going off topic here, but
I'm just saying, like, how we treated humans was probably worse than how we treated animals. And this movie reverses that. And we get to see, like, how the animals, because they're apes. I mean, let's be honest.
True.
If we're taking them at full face value, they are animals. And they're treating us as badly as we were treating them.
True. I mean, I really want you to say that favorite line, but I'm not going to let you, you know, I know you're not going to say it right now. But what I do find interesting, though, is that, and I, because I actually didn't know this, that the whole Statue of Liberty, like the scene, that like famous scene right at the end, you know, the fact that it was kept a secret during production to preserve its impact. I mean, it makes sense, because especially where it's also very iconic, you know, especially for this movie. Like, because if you didn't do that, I feel like it would have ruined everything, at least for the actors. You know what I mean? Like, getting that real emotion.
There's a lot of one-liners from this movie. Because, I mean, when you see the Statue of Liberty and, you know, you see Taylor, he's on the horse with the other, you know, female. You know, all these movies, like 68, 70s, even in the 80s, they were all one-liners. If you watch any of these movies, like, one-liners after one-liner after one-liner. And I believe his was like, you know, damn you, straight to hell. You
know, yeah. No, that's true. I think it was something similar to that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because we were talking about the makeup effects, or really the cosmetic and all that stuff, but the fact that it actually received an honorary Academy Award because of how great groundbreaking. I'm like, my God, Matt, you know, because you started this and now I'm starting to do this. You know, it was groundbreaking at the time. So, I mean, the fact that it received an honorary award from the Academy Awards, that's astonishing in my opinion.
nobody at the time was doing something to that level. I mean, you had, I mean, obviously in 68, it was all, every movie was practical effects, but I think in this level, like, you had so many.
Oh yeah. So many characters that were literally
people that apes. Needed like ape, you know, ape makeup, whether they were orangutan or they were actual gorillas or the chimpanzee version. Like, everybody had to have these like really heavy makeup and prosthetics and everything on their face. But you also had to have actors who could sell these performances through the prosthetics.
So what I find interesting, because I actually had to know like roughly how long did it actually take to make the original film? It said the original 1968 Planet of the Apes took several years of development with intensive pre-production in 1966 and principal photography lasting roughly 40 days in 1967. The complex prosthetic makeup designed by John Chambers required months of testing. And it says, while the 2001 remake was rushed with a tight production schedule from November 2000 to... Well, that makes sense. November 2000 to April of 2001. That says a lot right there. Because of how quickly it was done. The fact that the original film took years, and it said following years of failed scripts, the film was shot over roughly 40 days at a rapid pace in early 1967. I mean, because I would think back then, especially with like, and it says right here, featuring groundbreaking makeup that took hours to apply daily.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, you're talking hundreds of people that needed.
So, I mean, well, if you think about it, I mean, if it was back in 66, that they're starting. And now, granted, I know everyone's like, oh, yeah, I mean, if you, you know, you take several years, whatever. I mean, there's a difference between when you look at, like, today's movies. So, like, I'm going to throw Disney out here for a second. When you're talking about animation, the reason why it takes so long is because you're drawing and you're doing this, and it can take several pages, and it takes a long time to do all this. But we're talking about makeup. We're talking about this, you know. We're talking about all kinds of different things, and the fact that it was, like, constantly being done. In a very short amount of time. And I understand, you know, for this, I mean, they're probably only saying the 66 and 67. We're talking, it could have started back in like the early 60s when this, you know, when they were trying to do it all at the time.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, you're talking about all these years in between and then like the last 2 years before 1968, they're like, okay, now we're going to start doing all this. I'm just saying.
And once you realize that the budget that they had was $5.8 million,
and that's the other thing. You're stretching that coin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure most of it was on the prosthetics itself.
Right.
But, I mean, still, $5.8 million just to make a movie of this scale? Like, this easel, I mean, the original movie, and granted, 1968, you weren't making $100 million movies or $200 million movies.
No. And then the fact that, I mean, you and I have talked about it. Some of today's movies, the fact that they have a $500 million budget.
Right.
And you're like, holy shit. And then it also most of them, like shit.
Yeah, most of them suck.
Right. And then you're talking about a movie that had like literally, we'll call it $6 million to play with over so many years. Now, granted, I mean, if you look at probably the, you know, how much it was back then versus now, it probably would be like $100, maybe $200 million, give or take. And maybe I'm stretching that. Maybe it wasn't.
Right.
But even then, that's still insane. That's all I'm going to say. But anyways, I know.
Yeah, I mean, The movie itself, I mean, yeah, the pacing is pretty slow, you know, but it's more dialogue driven. It's not like one of these, like, you know, the newer versions are very much more action driven. You know, there's much more going on. This is really a much slower pace. But the movie, the original movie works because it's slower.
Well, and that's the thing though about the 60s, you know, I would say anywhere from like the 50s, actually. Really, once movies were invented till like maybe the 60s, 70s, you know, they were a lot slower. I mean, yeah, you might have some fast like action scenes and things like that, but not as big as
I think they're looking at
now.
More of the message. Like, you know, it's not about like, it wasn't necessarily about making these apes like, you know, super dynamic and flipping through the air and, you know, like the newer ones.
Right. No, I agree.
It was that message that the movie portrayed that hit harder because that was the whole idea.
Well, so if you think about it, even like I'm going to skip over the Mark Wahlberg one for a second, but like even the newer ones that the reboot, right? The first movie, I mean, it really wasn't action packed. It was actually just more trying to develop, you know, who Caesar was and like how this whole thing began. And And it was impactful. It was, you know, kind of emotional in that sense. And then, you know, you saw him in the second one, and then you saw him in the third one. And then, of course, you know, you moved to the fourth one. Yeah, and the second one, sure, like, there was a little bit, but, it, like, there was action, there was this and that, but they did try to, you know, at least progress the story. Like, sure, they had some action, but, the, you know, a lot of it, like you're saying, is the emotional piece, to try to build that story and to try to build these characters to be like, oh, well, you know, now I'm actually rooting for Caesar, you know, and I'm not rooting for, I think in the second one, it was Woody Harrelson was that general or whatever in the newer one. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, we were actually, like, you're rooting for the apes, and you're not rooting for, the, like, us, like, as humans. And it's kind of interesting that you're like, wait, am I rooting for an ape right now?
Yeah, I like, mean, it definitely, like, the newer ones flipped the script again on that because, yeah, I mean, before, with the originals, we were rooting for the humans to kind of take control. And I think the newer films, yeah, you're rooting for these apes that are now like trying to, they're fighting against each other now in the newer movies, right? Like,
well, yeah, some of them were. And then, yeah. And of course you had the human element because they're like, oh, we got to track down Caesar, you know, we got to track down his, like his cronies and him and all this other stuff. But like, you were kind of hoping that Caesar was going to, even though he was kind of a dictator, because that was kind of the whole, you know, empire thing that he was doing. But like, it was emotional in the sense that you're rooting for them. You're rooting for him to be, you know, I guess whatever this post-apocalyptic, you know, kind of setting it was. Cause I mean, if you think about it, cause once that virus happened, majority of humans basically died off. There were still some survivors, things like that, but there wasn't as many. So Right. That was the thing.
Yeah. So let's talk some sequels here. Cause this is like, this is that question where you get through the first movie and you're like, wow, this is really epic. This is really awesome. And then you have 1970 and we got Beneath the Planet of the Apes. I can tell you after this one, it basically Planet of the Apes just takes a hard left turn. They introduce underground mutant humans. They worship a nuclear bomb. And like I said, if you've ever envisioned what a Looney Tunes cartoon nuclear bomb looks like, watch this movie because you'll see. It's not actually a joke. That's the plot of the movie. Mutant human living underground, worshiping a nuclear bomb. Like, they have a church, and the nuclear bomb is, like, the where the cross would be. Like, they're worshiping, like, legit in a church. Like, you can't make it up, because this is what's happening. It goes from, like, something that was very thoughtful to really borderline absurd.
I mean, the fact that they made five films between literally 5 years, I mean, I look at that and I go,
from
why?
68 to 73.
Well, and it's sad because, like,
and each one had a smaller budget.
Right. And it's so, like, you know, reuse sets, increasingly chaotic storytelling. Okay, great. But here's the problem. And this is where, I guess, early Hollywood in the sense of this, and you're kind of like, you know, and here's the problem with all this. I feel like, you know, we still haven't, I mean, and it's true because even in, like, today's society, it feels like we're basically taking older movie ideas and then just revamping them into something newer and, like, trying to make it, you know, see if it's
and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
And, I mean, I would say in this case for, like, some of the newer ones, like, yeah, I feel like they've done a good job. But, like, yeah, I mean, the fact that five films in a five-year time frame and the budget was lower each movie that progressed, why would you do that? I mean, hell, you could have made, like, 10 years, like, 12, 15, whatever, you know, sure, made it all the way up to the 80s. I mean, it could have been more investment is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, if they really wanted to make this a franchise, which, I mean, they did, just a really quick one, you know, I feel like they could have invested more time.
It just feels like, you know, maybe, like, the studio or, you know, whoever was in charge of this beast, no pun intended there.
Kidding.
Is, like, we're figuring it out as we go. But we need a new Planet of the Apes movie. What do you have? Hey, how about underground mutants who worship, I don't know, maybe a nuclear bomb? And then, or how about, you know, how about in this one, we'll call it Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. We'll make it darker and more political, and we'll have ape slavery and rebellion. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then I love this one, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. And then you have the Battle for the Planet of the Apes. I also feel like these movie titles either get really longer. You know what I mean? Like, look, I mean, the Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, Battle for the Planet of the Apes. You know, and of course,
I mean, at least it wasn't like Escape from the Battle of the Conquest of the Planet of
the Apes. Like, and then you're like, holy shit.
Oh, man, what the hell?
Well, no, and I'm just saying, like, these names, I mean, and it was interesting because, like, these movies, I feel like.
Well, even the newer ones have that. I mean, War.
Well, no, I know, I know, I know. They do. But, I mean, I just find it interesting. Like, these ones, it's like Escape, you know, Conquest, Battle, you know, and, like, Beneath. You know, like, I look at it all and I'm like.
Yeah, they just get worse and worse. And, I mean, yeah. They were released in just 5 years, which is crazy. And you look at the budget cuts. I mean, they had to reuse the same ape masks and prosthetics across these multiple films.
I mean, wouldn't you? This is why I'm saying about like a, we'll call it like a 10 to 15 year time frame. You could have, I'm not sure, maybe you could have updated them. You could have done more with them. But the fact that you had to basically.
Not with a lower budget. I mean, you're talking you're talking like $6 million, and then the next movie is what, maybe four. And then by the time you get to the fifth one, it's like.
$500,000. Yeah, well, it's true because like then you look at it and you're like, wow, no wonder why they're.
And at the end of the last movie, the fifth movie there, the nuclear bomb that they were worshiping.
Blows up, right?
Literally destroys the entire Earth.
And then you're like, ta-da. That's it.
Yeah.
And then you go, wait, that's it? It's like that. That's all we get?
I mean, it went off the rails. Like, and I mean, 5 years, you're talking like not a whole lot of time in between. I mean, as soon as you finish one, you're basically like, and there's 5 movies, 5 years.
Yeah, so basically releases. Oh, we got to work on the next one. Yeah. No, and then so I just.
The mutant bomb worshippers are just they're just the weirdest, I think, of all the movies. They're like the weirdest. It's like if you put Star Trek right smack dab in the middle of Planet of the Apes, like that's what these people kind of like. And I'm talking original Star Trek, not newer Star Trek. I'm talking.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Captain Kirk and the shit that they were doing on that show. It's this like that's it's just weird.
I mean. Okay, let's both be honest here for a minute, okay? I mean, the fact that this franchise, you know, it went off the rails really fast. You know, it had one genius idea and then five increasingly desperate attempts to keep it alive, right? So the fact that, you know, you're basically your one movie, it's like, you know, it's like a one-hit wonder, okay? And then you're trying to recreate that same type of song or that same kind of feeling like five more times and saying, oh, we can get this. Oh, nope. Sorry. I guess that didn't work. Oh, well, let me try that again. And then you're like, what's the fucking point? If you have that one song, just, you know, great. I mean, it's kind of like, and I know we've talked about like Avengers and stuff. It's really hard to recreate that same, I don't know, feeling, presence, whatever you want to call it, like that same idea, you know, that's it. Like the only way to do that, right? I mean, granted, I mean, they did have a blueprint. They just fucked it up royally. You know, but the thing about it is, you know, right at the end there. But, like, no, I mean, the thing was is we all know that you have to put into the story. Like, you have to build it. And that's how you build. Like, the first movie was the foundation. That's great. Now, these other movies, if it made more sense and you actually had more time and maybe the same budget, or maybe a little bit more, like whatever. But again, if you had more time, you could invest more, you could do certain things. And then this could have been a very cult classic franchise.
Well, the original movies are cult classic already.
I agree with you, but I'm talking about the other movies.
Oh, yeah, the other movies are literally just forgotten.
Right, because only one that people talk about is the original one.
Yeah.
No other ones, because they're like, oh, mutant bomb worshippers, that's great. Let's figure out that shit real quick. And oh wait, at the very end of the last movie, boom. Right. Well, that's it. There we go, folks. That's the end of our franchise.
That's it.
And then everyone's like, hey, why don't we star Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, why don't we ask Mark Wahlberg to be in a movie? Like, well, that's your fucking first mistake.
Oh, great. Right. Yeah. See, he always has a problem with actors. I feel like that's his number one thing. He always talks about the actors.
No, it's certain actors. And
Mark Wahlberg is apparently number one.
If you plop Mark Wahlberg into a raunchy comedy, I think he's fine. As soon as you start putting him into a serious action role.
He's played some good serious action roles, just maybe not that particular one.
Well, I can mention a few, but I'm not going to in this one. I say we go to our fix it or nuke it.
Let's get geeky.
fix it! Nuke
it! Oh, man. Every time. Yeah, every time. Every time I look at Matt and I go,
picture,
nuke it.
You know, it just, oh, I don't know. It's just funny how the both of us were just like, eh, whatever. We'll just go with the flow on this one. But anyways, yes, though, fix it or nuke it, right? So we, it's our, if you haven't been here before and you haven't, this is like your first time. So it's, we're asking AI to either fix it or nuke this movie. You know, it'll basically tell us why we should fix it and then also tell us reasons why we should nuke it. And then it'll basically give us the end result of what we should do if we were in charge of, let's say, this movie.
This is sort of like, it's sort of the, how do I put this? The Walmart version of like what Planet of the Apes is. So it almost kind of makes sense because it's like the, if you don't know Battlefield Earth, this is a John Travolta epic sci-fi that's kind of like your Walmart production level. But I mean,
this was what, late, early, actually, no, I think it was early 90s, right?
This was 2000.
Just kidding. Early 2000.
Yes. So the movie is about basically the Earth's been conquered for 1,000 years by a race of giant alien capitalists called Cyclos. Humans are basically cavemen, enslaved, scattered, barely surviving. Then one guy, Johnny Goodboy. Yep, that's actually his name. Decides he's going to rise up, learn alien tech in about 5 minutes, and lead a rebellion to take Earth back. So this is supposed to be a post-apocalyptic uprising story, but it just plays out like bad improv with a sci-fi budget, which we know those sci-fi budgets are not huge unless you're, you know, making something that's higher class, I guess.
Well, I mean, even the original Star Trek, I mean, wasn't probably has the biggest budget in the world, but I mean, it made it work for what they did, for sure.
No, I mean, Star Trek now, though, I mean, you're talking...
Oh, no, I mean, easily like $100 million or more,
right?
Sure.
So this movie was based on a Scientology novel written by L. Ron Hubbard,
yes,
which kind of like raises eyebrows before you even watch the movie. You're like, oh, those weirdos, yes.
Yeah, so that, you know, the guy that basically invented Scientology, yes, this is the guy who decided, hey, let's make a book out of this.
And John Travolta, as you may or may not know, is a Scientologist.
Let me guess. Oh, wait, I can name a few. Tom Cruise is being number one.
Tom Cruise is one, yeah. There's a lot more.
I know there's a lot more, yeah.
The movie basically is infamous for its constant tilted. You have to watch the movie.
No, I know, but it's sorry.
It's like constant tilted camera shots. Like, if the cameraman fell down a staircase and just kept filming, this is the movie, basically. And these are not actual jokes. This is like, this movie is like for real, and when you watch it, you just have to shake your head and go, who approved this?
Well, and you know, and I was just, because I had to remember exactly, too. And then you look at John Travolta's character.
Cyclos, yeah.
I mean, you look at him and you go, did you just steal this idea from Star Trek? You know, seriously, I mean, you look at his like weird, it almost looks like Predator too, with his like fucking weird ass hair, or his like, you know what I'm talking about? The dreads. I mean, literally, it's like this weird dreads that basically it's like they took Predator and they took a little bit of Star Trek and they just decided to mix the two together. I kid you not. You'll look at him again and you'll go, oh, yep, there it is.
Okay, but they bought their costumes at Walmart.
Again, same idea here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Cyclos, you know, the aliens, right? They're basically loud, sweaty cartoon villains with zero intimidation factor. Sweaty cartoon villains. That's an interesting term.
It's just awful. It's like I'm looking at a picture, and it's like I said, if you bought, like a dread head wig.
Right. And, I mean, like I said, you took, like, you pretended like you wanted to be, like a predator, but like a little longer of dreads. But you're not really him. And then you're taking a little bit of Star Trek, a little bit, maybe some like, you know, layaway, you know, Walmart edition, you know, whatever you want to call it. And then you're trying to mix this two together and saying, okay, here you go. Here's your costume.
And if the villains like weren't bad enough, the humans that are like the main players in this movie, like they go from, and I don't joke about this, like they go literally from post-apocalyptic, like I'm talking Mad Max level cavemen type people. They have no technology. I mean, there's no technology. There's no nothing. Like they're living in caves and huts, and they go from that to all of a sudden they're flying planes and ships. They're using like the Cyclo's tech. And you're like, how long is this movie? Does it take place like over months? No. It's probably like a week.
You're like, oh, wait, I know everything about what it is to be a fighter pilot. That makes total sense, especially in a movie time.
It's like having a baby and then throwing like Wyatt in like an F-15 and go, hey, good luck. Good luck.
Good luck, kid. Get on that. Get on there, there, brilliant. And you fucking take those guys down. And you're like, wait a minute. How the fuck does a two-year-old like know what the hell they're doing? Yeah, same
it's
idea.
It's the same thing. Like if we just sat in like an F-15 or even like a 747.
Like, all right, here you go.
And they're like, I got to go fight against the Cyclos.
And then both of us go, yeah, and then we both crash because we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
No, we don't know what we're doing.
And then the fact that this movie, okay, it's like you might as well just put it against like the Super Mario Brothers movie, okay? Regarded as one of the worst movies ever made, not just because it was fun bad, because of also because it was just confusing, ugly, and exhausting. Okay, so I mean, if you're talking about some of the worst movies of all time, and it's up there, that's saying a lot.
I'll say this. In 2000, there's this award show. Okay. It's not just in 2000. They do it today.
Well, it's not Rotten Tomatoes. It's it's
the Golden Raspberry Awards.
Razzies,
These are the Razzies. It received 7. And these include Worst Picture, Worst Actor, that was John Travolta, Worst Supporting Actor, Barry Pepper, Worst Supporting Actress, Preston, Worst Director, Worst Screenplay, and Worst Screen Couple.
Wow. That's saying a lot.
And it actually tied for the highest number won by a single film at that time, with Showgirls receiving 7 as well.
Wow. So if that says anything, we're talking about an award show that basically defines the worst of the worst. And this,
and if that wasn't bad, they actually later on in 2010 received an 8th Razzie.
Oh, God.
For worst drama of our first 25 years.
Oh, my God. The fact that it won another award.
That's not all of them, though.
Oh, God.
In 2010, it received another one for worst picture of the decade.
Oh, even
so
better.
So now they have 9, and they have a record for the most Razzies won by a single film.
That says a lot.
Other than Jack and Jill, which won 10.
Oh, wait a minute. Adam Sandler's Jack and Jill.
Yeah,
God. Wow.
But 9, you're talking worst picture, worst actor, worst supporting actors, worst. That's pretty much everybody in the movie.
But saying, you suck, don't ever make a film again. Now, I mean, now don't get me wrong. John Travolta, I mean, I did have to look up Barry Pepper again, but like he was a good actor too back in the day. But, you know, just saying, I love the fact worst director, worst screenplay, like, damn. Like, the fact that you're going to be like, hey, so do you have any Razzies? Yeah, you remember that movie, Battlefield Earth? Yeah, I directed that. How fucking dare you? It's like, how dare you make that movie?
Yeah, and it's no surprise that John Travolta did not attend.
No kidding on that one. No kidding.
So, John, let's go into how we could actually fix, if there was a thing to fix this. How would we do this? And we have like...
I love this little side thing.
I think there's 4 here, I believe, but what I see.
So I see the actual fix ideas, and then it just says, pick your poison. It's like,
pick your poison.
Do you know which one you're going to choose? I don't know yet. We're going to find out.
So the very first one is ground it in time and struggle. So you would scrap the learn everything in a weekend nonsense, make it a generational rebellion where humans have been enslaved for centuries, slowly rediscovering knowledge, building resistance over time. If you think slow burn uprising, not speed run to victory, which is what happens in this movie. This is why I said earlier, like, this fits with the Planet of the Apes thing. If you make it slower, you bring this generational rebellion.
No, and that would make sense because it actually would make it more meaningful and more effective in the case of this movie. Now, even like the second one here, you know, fix the Cyclos, right? you know, make them more terrifying, right? So drop the goofy yelling and weird laughter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, make them cold, calculating industrial overlords, right? Less cartoon, more oppressive regime. You know, you should feel why humanity lost. Like, if you have a villain that just looks cheesy as hell or campy, as I've learned, right?
Right.
You know, you need to make them like more, at least realistic, more threatening, more everything, because why would you just go like, you know, this weird laughter that they're doing and they're not making it.
I'm sure that's not how they laugh.
Gosh. Right? Ooh, it sounds like Goofy.
Gosh.
Oh, gosh. Hey, Darian, give me your money now. You know, no, I'm just saying you need to make it more meaningful. Like it's saying here, like you need to right. make it more fascinating.
You should feel why we lost as humanity, which Planet of the Apes does that. Commit to one tone and stick to it. So you really have, you know, the people making this film, they should have immediately decided whether this was a dark sci-fi or whether it was campy. And then you stick with it. Like, if you try to be serious and everything around it is ridiculous and over the top, it's not going to work, right? Like, you have one tone, but then you're going full ridiculous, or you're already like your tone is ridiculous, but you're trying to make it dark. Like, you can shine a turd, but it's still going to be a piece of shit.
You know what I mean? Well, not, like, I mean, it's like, the reason why Spaceballs did really well, because yes, I know it was making like a parody of Star Wars, but at least it was like cheesy enough to still make it a successful
thing. It leaned
thing.
In that way. Like, if you're going to make it a dark sci-fi, you go gritty, you make it brutal. If you're leaning towards that campy, you know, almost satire or parody, then you just go full absurd and you make it intentionally over the top.
Right. And you make it funny. You make it like wild and crazy like that. But like you're saying, you need to.
You can't have both.
You can't. And I feel like you're right. Because like if you're because I feel like this movie should have like I think their tone was definitely trying to do the dark, but they're just making it more campy than anything.
And this guy's name, I mean, I'm sorry, but Johnny Goodboy Tyler.
They need to change the damn name.
Come on. It does sound like a cereal mascot. Like, hey, Johnny Goodboy Tyler here is eating his cereal. Like,
you know, why in their good mind were they like, hey, Johnny Goodboy Tyler, you know, like that's the name of this character. Like, what about Jack? I don't know. Jack Valentine. I don't know. Something stupid. I don't know.
But you just original. You cut the good boy out and just say Johnny Tyler. Like,
yeah, something. I mean, good boy.
You know, but you have to, if your main character is going to be your main character, you need to like make him flawed, make him unsure, make him outmatch. Like somebody who actually earns the leadership and isn't just being like, oh yeah, you're going to learn this strange alien tech in 5 minutes because you're going to pick it up and know what it is.
Well, and Johnny Goodboy, like good boy could have been a nickname, not his, like his full name, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe
still stupid. Like, hey,
it is stupid, but
hey, good boy, go eat your fucking cereal. Hey, good boy.
Exactly. Why don't you go eat your damn cereal?
Learn your fucking Rice Krispies over there. Yeah.
Why don't you get your fucking Fruit Loops ass over here and start learning this tech? Okay. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, and then here's our other side to this. So, why should we nuke it, right? You know, so honestly, this thing might just be cooked, right? So not a missed opportunity in a way, more like every single creative decision was the wrong one. The tone's confused, the acting is wild in the worst way, the visuals are distracting, and the story skips every step that you would want to care for, right? So it doesn't just stumble, it refuses to make sense. And the bigger problem, there's no cultural demand to bring it back. Nobody's sitting around saying, you know what? This deserves a fucking reboot, Battlefield Earth. You know, it doesn't have a fan base waiting. It doesn't have unfinished business. It's just there, right? It's like a weird artifact from a time when studios threw money at anything and hoped it worked out. At some point, you don't fix it, you learn from it. So in this case, nuke it, bury it, let future filmmakers use it as a cautionary tale. I do agree. This movie should never have existed, and I think it should have, honestly, if anything, it's like you put it in DC Elseworlds. Like, just put it in a fucking vault somewhere and say, don't ever watch this movie. I'm telling you, you don't want to watch it because it doesn't make any fucking sense to begin with.
So this is something that Roger Ebert had said about the movie. He's a critic, or was a critic, not anymore.
Yes, it was Ebert and Robert. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they used to do the two thumbs up thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he says, Battlefield Earth is like taking a bus trip with somebody who has needed a bath for a long time. It's not merely bad, It's unpleasant in a hostile way. I watched it in mounting gloom, realizing I was witnessing something historic. A film that for decades would come to come will be the punchline of jokes about bad movies.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. I don't know what it is now, but it...
I'm actually curious. I feel like I got to look this up for 2 seconds.
At the time, like, this says that Rotten Tomatoes had a score of 3% of 151 critics were positive. Like, 3% of the critics
positive. So it's still a 3% rating as I'm looking this up. And IMDb says it's a 2.5 out of 10. If that says... And actually, you know what's really funny? You could actually watch this movie on Prime. It's like
that does not surprise me at all.
That's probably the only service it's ever going to be on. But yeah, I mean, I'm actually curious about the director. Yikes. Yep. I don't know this guy specifically, but let's see. He's done Battlefield Earth, Nostradamus, Stranded, Prisoners of the Sun. He's done a lot of like 80s and 90s movies. Actually, Jesus, what the hell is this movie? This one's called Masterminds, and it's with Patrick Stewart as literally the main character, with Patrick Stewart having a mustache. It's an action comedy. I don't know. That's a weird one. So clearly, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And it says apparently he did. He won an Academy Award for Best Art Direction Set Direction or Decoration for his work on the original. That's why. Because he worked on the set back in the Star Wars days, but he also won a second Oscar nomination for his work on Alien. Interesting. Well, I can tell you as a director, don't ever do that again.
He actually doesn't have anything that's like
meaningful.
I mean, maybe like, yeah, this one's not either.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm like looking.
Prisoners of the Sun, Stranded, Bandito, American Daylight, Battlefield Earth, Masterminds, Underworld, not the one that you're thinking. The Final Cut. Nostradamus, Starship, I mean, none of these movies.
No, I've never heard of half of them.
Yeah.
I was like, I literally looked at all of them. I'm like, you got me on that one. I have no idea. So anyways, no, he clearly should not be a director.
I mean, he was a second unit director for Return of the Jedi, for Star Wars.
Fine.
You're also talking about a second unit that really doesn't do most of the shit that the first unit does.
Right, and basically he's there as a backup.
And he was a set director for Star Wars. He was an art director for Alien and Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Interesting. Very interesting.
But we asked the question, can it be fixed?
Absolutely.
Or do we just nuke it? And my vote is
nuke it. Nuke it the hell out of the way, because this movie should never have existed. I agree with you, Ebert, because I'm telling you, no fucking way should this movie have ever been made. But going back to our lovely Planet of the Apes. So, yes.
Yeah, modern trilogy.
Ah, what do you know? Now, I understand. I know Matt's still, you know, biased on the original movie. And I get that. And I do agree that the original was a good movie. I'm just saying, for a modern take on this trilogy, or basically this franchise, I really think... Yes, I understand. Like the very first one was a good movie, based off the fact that it was, you know, learning about the culture of the apes and understanding like how they did things. The fact that this movie or these sets of movies have transcended, there we go, that's a better term. Literally, how they started out and then were working on how they became this civilization. That's right. What I like about it is because they've done that and they did it so well.
No, and I love the building of it. Like, I think when they make it, you know, and you can see the origin, you can see like how they got to ultimately where we know that it is Planet of the Apes. It's obviously, right. Like you know, seeing that build up is kind of that key thing. But I do love that what they did in these movies with the motion capture.
Oh yeah, I mean with Andy Serkis, man, this dude for like, you know, at least with the CGI effect, there we go, the motion capture, like with the mocap, there we go, the mocap suits that they wear. This guy, I'm telling you, man, with Gollum and this and like a few other things that he's done, I feel like he's definitely like, I would say at least in the top five for like who does this so well in the mocap stuff. He just does it, and it's like he brings an essence.
Well, and they have, I mean, you're talking motion capture here. You're not just talking like he's sitting in front of a microphone like we are. And
no, right. Yeah,
and like just talking, you know, in weird voices. No, like they have on their sets and everything, like they go through training of how to walk like an ape, how to like do certain movements, how to act and how to do so. Like they have a trainer that just go, like teaches them how to do it.
The thing is though, for him, like he just does it so well. Like I'm telling you, man, I'm not saying he's the GOAT. Okay. He's the GOAT. No, never mind.
In this case, he's kind of an ape.
That's true. Yes. No, I'm just saying in the case of this, like he just does it, at least with mocap and CGI and all this other stuff, like all the voices he does and everything else. Like he, in my opinion, I would say in top five, does it very well. And I think he just does it so well that, I mean, because honestly, when you, like, because you learn the fact that, yes, he plays or portrays Caesar, you definitely wouldn't have known. I feel like most people, like if at least let's say you didn't know who he was. I think at first I actually didn't realize that he was playing Caesar. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't realize he was Caesar. But it was like you didn't know.
Right.
Like, you know, like Gollum, it was a little like, okay, you kind of figured maybe a little bit. But like this one, I don't know why. When I first heard him, I honestly didn't know. And I was like, damn, like this is pretty good shit, in my opinion, when you're looking at this. But, you know, so yes, like we're saying is like, you know, the focus is on, you know, Caesar's journey, you know, from the intelligent experiment to reluctant, you know, kind of leader to a war-hardened survivor. You know, it's less about the spectacle and more about character evolution, which, like I said, the first three movies, you know, you're kind of building that empire and you're kind of looking at Caesar's journey. You know, the newest one is more, I think it's like, oh, I can't even remember how many years. It's like 25 or 50. I don't know. It was well past when Caesar basically died. But like it's showing you kind of like what they're trying to look forward to now in his vision that he was describing to a lot of these apes. And so, you know, and the fact of right here, this one I do kind of agree with, like the themes of like the newer trilogy like movies here is like the fear of science, animal rights, human failure, and the consequences of playing God, right? It modernizes the original film's ideas without copying them. And it's true. I mean, because like, you know, and I think in the very first movie, it actually shows, like, I think it was when he like gets thrown into the, I think it was like at the zoo or something like that. And it's like these two zookeepers were like kind of being dicks to Caesar. You know, like they're poking him and they're doing all stupid shit and they're electrocuting him.
Yeah.
And then it's like and then he finds a way to like do it back to them. And it's like, and then you're like, oh shit. Like again, you're rooting for Caesar, you know, to become, you know, who he is.
I mean, I think these movies like did something unique, especially like when you're looking at Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, when you look at that movie, like where neither side is evil, you know, like neither side is wrong.
Right.
But
I mean, you kind
of both sides have that drive of like, you know, fear and the mistrust and you know, wanting to survive. You know, so it's like you're kind of torn because one, as a human, you do want to root for humans.
No,
at least I would hope. I mean, if you're just like, well, fuck humans, like the apes are better. I mean, then you might have to go for mental health counseling. Well,
but
no, like either side isn't like, yeah, there are bad players. For sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially on Caesar's team. I mean, that fuckhead of an ape. You know that one. You know.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like both sides have their play. You know, bad players. But it's like, neither of them are like evil or, you know, are the clear villains. Like you're kind of like, I don't know how the, you know. Well, we know how it goes, but
But I mean, my opinion though, when I'm looking at that movie, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Caesar was right about everything, but I will say that. Especially when he started to get like towards like the war for the Planet of the Apes and things like that, you know, it was interesting to see him kind of play like a Moses, you know, or kind of like a Gandhi. I mean, not so much Gandhi, but like kind of like taking that, you know, I would say kind of backwards role and saying, "Hey, I'm going to be like your oracle, you know, and like someone that's wise and things like that." And so it's interesting to see, You know, how he's like, rawr! You know, when he's like just screaming and trying to beat the crap out of everybody in the first two movies. And then like the last one here, like, you know, because it shifts into this darker, almost biblical tone, you know, and, you know, he's leading his people through suffering towards like a promised future. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Like I said, I feel like these movies have definitely made it so that way if, you know, more, you know, Planet of the Apes, you know, want to continue, this is a good way to show it in a different light.
Yeah. You know? I mean, one of the things that in the later, a little bit later in the notes, it's kind of like one of these like hot takes, but I don't know if it's really a hot take, because I think when you look at these movies and you look at the source material, I think when you look at these movies again, it actually respects that source material rather than taking it and either milking it for everything that can possibly come out of it, or you're like, well, here's the original source material. We don't really like it too much, so we're just going to create our own thing. And usually you end up with shit that sucks. Like, you know what I mean? Then,
I mean, I'm glad they didn't want to go like the route of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, you know, and then like do the last film kind of a deal. But I mean, it's nice to see that they're at least following the tone of what, you know, Planet of the Apes originally started at. And then, you know, sure, they're revamping it a little bit. They're doing different things with it. But like you're saying, they're making sure that the essence of the original film,
yeah,
or films, well, maybe not the last five, yeah, but, well, you know, or four really. But like, you know, I just think that the fact that they're at least drawing some of that material from the originals is nice to see that in a newer take, because you and I both know that a lot of, like, if you said, okay, the original was great back in whenever it came out, and then you revamp it and you do it in today's society, and they go, nah, fuck that shit. We're gonna redo the whole fucking thing. Forget the goddamn blueprint. No. We're gonna fuck all this shit up. Hey, we don't even know the characters. We're gonna just fuck it all up just for you guys.
We're making our own fucking blueprint right now.
Yeah, fucking prick. And I'm like, wait, didn't you just have all this stuff that you had in the written? No, fuck that. We don't, you know, oh yeah, Johnny, you know, good boy over here. No. Now we're gonna change that kid, Tyler. We're gonna call him, you know, Jack or something stupid. And you're just like,
it could be Johnny Fuckboy.
Yeah, Johnny Fuckboy. And like,
wait, what?
Fuckboy. Where did you get good boy? Fuckboy. Like, what is? Oh yeah, it just draws the crowd better. You know, especially with the newer generation. You know, the fuckboys. You know, not good boy. You know, but yeah, I mean, for this, I would say the reason why it all matters, right? It's like setting a new standard for reboots, which is true. I mean, because like a lot of reboots don't typically do what this, like these sets of movies have done. And like the CGI character storytelling, I mean, and that's another big one, because, you know, CGI, we both know that CGI can either go one way or the other, or you can do a movie and you don't complete the damn CGI in it, and it basically fucks up the entire movie.
Yeah.
You know?
So one of these interesting things, Roddy McDowall, who is originally Cornelius in the original movie, he also did play Caesar across multiple films.
Oh, interesting.
And that kind of becomes like that, a connecting tissue to the original like series of movies. Because he was one of those, I mean, like he was one of the original apes in the original movie.
Right.
His performance to be able to convey, you know, emotions through prosthetics is like, I mean, it's crucial to that franchise's success. Charlton Heston, his character, George Taylor, I mean, that he's one of the most, like, you're talking Planet of the Apes, it's Charlton Heston. Like, above Andy Serkis, like, his performance.
No, I get what you're saying.
Like, I think he's one of the, I mean, yes, is he cynical in the movie? Very cynical, but he is one of the main protagonists in sci-fi right now. Like, he hates humanity from the start. He hates the apes. So it's like, he's just one of those iconic characters, you know, that makes the movie and the ending hit even harder. Yeah. And the reboot, you know, we kind of broke down, I think, pretty well, but like, yeah, it's very heavily leaning towards that performance driven storytelling. I mean, you have the motion capture, you know, Andy Serkis turned Caesar into kind of the most compelling non-human characters, I think, in film history.
And I, And that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, his character alone and, like, you know, doing the first three films, I mean, it shows that you want, yeah, and I know we were joking about the mental health thing, but, you know, it shows that you want Caesar to win. And it's interesting because, you know, we always talk about, like, human, you know, like, always trying to win in this case. But now we're like, oh, no, we want an ape to win, because now you're seeing the struggle. Now you're seeing all this, basically the same idea as if Caesar was a human, but now you're just seeing it as an animal or an ape in this case. And now you're seeing him and you're like, now I just want him to win. Yeah, fuck that guy up, Caesar. You kick his ass, you know. Right. You know, like, you're like, fuck Woody Harrelson, you know, like, get his ass over there. You know, you're kind of like rooting for him. And that's exactly what I was doing in those films, like, just watching him. I'm like, that's right, Caesar, you kick his ass, you know, beat his ass. And he's like, you know, no, do what you gotta do, man. And it's weird because, like you're saying, you know, the fact that at least the newer sets of films have created such nostalgia. I almost would
like them to not, like, reboot the original, but go back to, you know, because the last movie was really just the struggle between apes, right? Like, it was that, like...
Oh, you're talking about the newest one?
Yeah. Well, it really was like that. Like, sure, there were humans, I'm sure, that were in there.
Yeah,
but
there was, yeah.
But it was really, like, this internal kind of strifing, right?
Well, I mean, technically the second movie was kind of doing that too, but of course you had the human element, and that's kind of like the third film as well.
But I would almost like to see them take on, like, this concept, but, like, kind of revamping the story from that original, where now that they rule, and, like, it's right. Not like, you know, a lot of these earlier reboots, like, humans were still kind of like, even though, yes, that virus wiped out billions, we're saying billions, they were still sort of like working together, you know, right. Humans were still doing what they were doing. They were trying to, like, you know, help the apes and help, you know, do certain things. And as the movies progressed, it was like apes are on one side, humans are on the other, but it would be interesting to see this current iteration of Planet of the Apes where they're taking humans as slaves. And they're treating humans like they did in the original movie. Like, that would be interesting to me.
I mean, I could definitely see, you know, maybe, like, they're, because I think they're making another one after this next one that they just had. It would be interesting if they kind of went back to the original kind of first film, right? And then kind of do that same concept. The problem is, though, to get, I'm not saying to, like, you damn dirty apes, you know, like, not like quite like that, but, like, you have to find a person, maybe not like the same caliber.
No, and I don't think you have to copy, you know, what they did in the original movie either. I mean, you can make it new, you know, but you just have that, you know.
But you got to find that leading actor. That's the question. And Matt's like, not Mark Wahlberg, I'll tell you. He's like, not Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I tell you. I'm going to name Sophia. He's like, not. And he's like, why don't you just shut up and pick somebody already?
No, like, if you had it your way, it'd be like Arnold Schwarzenegger and...
I'll be back.
John fucking Cena.
John! Never mind.
No, John Cena!
You can't see me? My time is now! You're like, wait,
no,
what?
No, but I mean, it's, you know, Caesar might be like, I mean, I'm not going to say he's the best,
you know what?
But he's probably the best character in the entire franchise.
Okay, you know what? I got another one for you. What if Stone Cold Steve Austin? Right now. Come on.
Stone Cold!
I got another beer!
You know, like, oh, come on. Tell me that would be cool if you saw him play a character like that. I feel
not
like,
today, no.
Oh, come on. I feel like that would be funny. Okay, how about Brock Lesnar? He's Brock like, Lesnar. All right. He's
why
like,
we,
all right.
Why stop. Are we talking wrestlers?
I don't know, because shit. You brought up wrestlers. Because you're like, John Cena. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll just start bringing up anybody else. No, I feel like.
Because John Cena is actually acting.
Okay, and Stone Cold was technically in a couple films, so it's not like he hasn't acted before.
No, but he shouldn't.
Oh, come on. Well, you got to have the listen, caliber of him, you know.
Just because listen, you brother. Can.
Listen, brother.
Listen, just brother.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should. You understand?
He's like,
you dig.
You dig. R.I.P. Hollywood. Anyways, no. No, I like I said, you know, with this whole franchise as a whole, right? Because I feel like we definitely need to kind of close up things here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with Planet of the Apes, right, you know, it started as like this genius level sci-fi concept, but, you know, it completely lost its mind halfway through, then somehow came back decades later, smarter, sharper, and better than ever. Not bad for a franchise without about talking monkeys. I love that. You know, judging humanity. If nothing else, it proves one thing. Humans might think that we're at the top of the food chain, but give it enough time, we'll probably screw it up again. You know, and that's what we've been saying. Yes, they probably will screw it up again, and we'll find a way to cure cancer. And wait. And then we might get zombie vampire monkeys. Oh my God, that'd be weird.
Oh boy.
Oh God, we just that sucks. He's right like, wait a minute, is that another movie idea? No, zombie vampire monkeys. What are we doing? I don't know. No, but anyways, boys and girls, you know, we've been having some good times with Planet of the Apes. But, you know, check us out, like we've said before, and let us know how you think of this episode and any other episodes, and, you know, reach out to us. But until next time.